There's an EQ element called stress tolerance, which is essentially it's our ability and tendency to manage stressful situations. And for many of us, our stress levels, you know, they're just going to be amplified during this time.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. Emotional intelligence expert Edith Richards returns to the podcast this week to explain how EQ factors into future of work success. Research from Owl Labs and Global Workplace Analytics suggests that 80% of people who work full-time are pivoting to a hybrid workplace model. With so many people transiting between a traditional office and home office settings, EQ becomes an important practice for people seeking clear understanding of others who are not in the same physical space. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, as Edith offers key insight to help us use EQ for success in the future of work. We spoke with Edith Richards earlier this week over Zoom. Edith Richards, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be back.
It's good to see you. It's been so long.
It really has. It has been a while. I think it's been at least a year and a half, maybe, since I was on before.
And that was face-to-face. That wasn't virtual.
Yeah, but we can still see each other, so that's a plus. Yeah.
That's right. So let's get started. So since the world shut down in March of 2020, how we work and where we work have radically changed. And some of us have pivoted to working from home full-time. Actually, I've been doing it like 28 years. I'm sort of the outlier. Others have adjusted to a hybrid work arrangement where part of the week they're in a traditional office and part of the week they're working remotely, such as at home. What are your impressions of and insights over this dramatic shift in how we work?
So I heard this great analogy the other day that life is now like a box of Legos. We may not be able to build the spaceship, but we can build a really great castle. We've got to work with what we have, right? And that's going to mean rebuilding the interior of that castle periodically. And that's kind of where we are right now, I think. So this pandemic, it's testing us all, and we all have different challenges. And I think that relates directly to emotional intelligence. It's never been more important to be emotionally intelligent and utilize those skills than it is now. So if I may just start by sharing what emotional intelligence really is, because I think there may be some misconceptions about that. A lot of people don't understand kind of the nuances of emotional intelligence. It's not just being nice to people and being a good communicator. And I'm going to call it EQ just for brevity's sake here. So EQ is a set of skills that help you to recognize, to understand, and to manage your emotions in order to effectively produce the behavior that you want. So in practical terms, this means that being aware that our behavior, whatever behavior that is going to impact people both positively and negatively. And with regards to working from home, that's kind of the biggest adjustment I think a lot of people have made in this past year. And that's going to be easier. It's an easier adjustment for some people than others, just by nature of who they are. In regards to your question about insights in terms of what's happened in this shift in work, this shift in the way that we work. So in terms of emotional intelligence, I'll tell you what immediately comes to mind for me. It's this element of EQ called flexibility. And that's our ability and our tendency to adjust to life's changing circumstances, to pivot when evidence suggests that we're going in the wrong direction. And some people are just naturally flexible people. Mm-hmm. And as such, we're able to anticipate and to manage change. We're open to different viewpoints, different ways of doing things. And we admit when we're wrong and we learn from our mistakes. And many people aren't naturally flexible. They're very rigid in the way that they think. They have trouble adapting to change. They may hold on to certain viewpoints that are limiting, and they may be slow to act and even slow to admit when they're wrong. We've seen this in the past several months that companies that have been flexible have been open to alternative work arrangements. We've seen how they've stepped up. We've seen how they've adapted. And we've seen positive results from this. In surviving in the midst of economic turmoil, it means adapting to new technology, to serving customers differently, and essentially just embracing this new normal.
As an EQ expert, you help people apply emotional intelligence skill to thrive in their careers. What special challenges are you responding to from your clients who are experiencing pandemic-caused work and workplace transitions?
A big one is stress management. There's an EQ element called stress tolerance, which is essentially it's our ability and tendency to manage stressful situations. And for many of us, our stress levels, you know, they're just going to be amplified during this time. What I'm thinking about are the people who have no choice but to continue to work during the pandemic. For example, our first responders, right. Certain customer service people, people who are in trades or public safety careers. There's no other time, probably since all of us have been alive, that we've needed to withstand the effects of stress than during this time. And when we're stressed, our brains are undergoing these chemical changes. They can lead to physical issues, high blood pressure, and more can leave us susceptible to illness. And then chronic stress leads to mental and emotional problems. So difficulty remembering things, irritability, even substance abuse. So in terms of emotional intelligence, I think a really good gauge of our own emotional intelligence is to ask ourselves, how do we show up? How do I show up when I'm under stress? It's one thing to show up as professional and articulate during normal circumstances, but in the midst of a crisis, how well do we really do this? Are we able to communicate and present ourselves in a way that brings people together? Or do we alienate others? Do we say or do things that we later regret? So these are some questions to ask ourselves regarding our ability to handle the stress in these times.
You know, the most notable change that I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen, is how we use Zoom now to engage with coworkers, prospects, and clients. How can people who have to use Zoom a lot for work benefit from the best practices of EQ?
That's a great question because immediately I'm thinking of another EQ element called emotional expression. So emotional expression is the degree to which we share and remain transparent with our emotion. Obviously, when you're talking about Zoom, and that's our main mode of communication for many of us, it presents a real challenge when we're working virtually because we don't have those external cues to rely on, those external communication cues, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So for those of us who have studied communication, we know that over 60% of what we communicate accounts for those external cues, our body language, our facial expressions, our gestures, tone of voice, mm-hmm. intonation, and very little of our communication is the actual words that we use. So here we are in this virtual environment. We don't have a lot of those external cues to rely upon. So what happens? Our brains are going to fill in that information for better or for worse. And then what can very easily happen is misreading or misinterpreting other people's emotions and intentions. And ultimately that reduces quality of communications. If we let it, and this is one of the beautiful things about emotional intelligence, is it is a choice. We have the choice to use these skills or not as the situation demands. So Zoom and other virtual modes of communication can reduce the quality of communication if we let it. We do have to make these adjustments from time to time. And I know for myself, I give a lot of webinars that are audio only. I'm on the phone a lot during the day. I've found that I've had to amplify my own communication. I've had to tune in deeper. I've had to ask more questions to make sure I'm understanding that other person correctly, make sure I'm giving appropriate verbal cues to let them know that I'm listening. And it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
There's this concept I first heard a few months back called Zoom fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a real thing. And I know you know what I'm talking about here.
Well, you know, Zoom fatigue. So we are so conditioned, and many of us who've worked many years in a traditional office setting, we're used to that face-to-face interaction that's not broken up digitally. Zoom for many people, like I watch what happens to Marcia. So my wife teaches, and she also is an online seller. And Zoom becomes an engagement tool for the participants to say, okay, before we get started, how's everybody doing? And they all go around and they talk about their challenges and what's going on in the world and some of the barriers that they are feeling to success. So I think for some, it's naturally percolating up that they're realizing, before we get into the nuts and bolts, let's just see how everybody's doing. And I imagine some people are doing it very well. And I imagine some people aren't doing it well enough.
Whatever it is that we're struggling with, I think whatever we struggled with pre-pandemic, we're struggling with post-pandemic, and it's right. Amplified. And we have to work harder to overcome that.
Time management, I think, and resource management are the two things we all have to learn or relearn. So I'm in a home setting right now. I don't live in a lot of square footage anymore. I am sharing now internet bandwidth with two other people because my daughter has been home for some of the semester. She's doing her schoolwork. It takes a lot of bandwidth. My wife is teaching from home because she got a special dispensation to work virtually and not be in a hybrid situation. So she's drawing on bandwidth. We're all doing Zoom. And so it forces us, because we can't go remote within our square footage. We're in each other's grill, so to speak. And we literally have to plan out our day. We're talking at 10 o'clock in the morning, and my wife and I had a workout. Okay, where are you going to be at 10 so that your meeting's not bleeding into my meeting, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's what's going on in homes and in co-op work settings all the time right now. These things that we took for granted because we could always close an office door, we can't do anymore. And we've got kids at home and they have need. And they're going to come up to you and say, I don't understand this problem that the teacher gave me, or can you give me some help with my homework? And so now the whole day is being completely upended. And that clock that we used to rely on to tell us when the workday was over, that's broken, because work is going to happen when it needs to or when it's beneficial to us, right?
I was just yesterday reading an article about this, about the stress that families are under and how it compares to people who don't have kids, for example. I don't have kids, so I don't think I have as much stress centered around that as a lot of people do, but I can absolutely appreciate what you're talking about here, because it's a good place to mention this, because regardless of what you're struggling with, I think there's one thing that we can do to get a handle on this, at least a little bit, is to pause and think about the emotion that's behind that and name the emotion. And then once you've identified and named the emotion, think about the cause of it. And if you really start to dig deep and ponder the root cause, that's the first step in coming to a resolution. This is enhancing that element of emotional intelligence called self-awareness. And if you don't take the time to stop and consider these things, you can't state what you're feeling. If you can't state what you're feeling, you're not really aware of what your emotional landscape is. And if you can't do that, how do you know there's a problem?
Right.
Yeah, if you don't know there's a problem, how are you going to make any changes? You can't until you develop that awareness. And this mm-hmm. is what I think is the foundation of emotional intelligence. If you're not aware, there's nothing that you can do.
There are people still actively in the workforce of a certain age, probably Gen X, probably people like me, late baby boomers. They've never had to incorporate these skills into their day because so much of their day was being an individual, going off on their own, and controlling the day and the outcomes. What are we dealing with right now? Complete and utter lack of control, because we are all in the soup together. All of our stuff is bumping up against everybody else's stuff. And so that emotional intelligence that you try to help people get empowered with is so critical now, because it's not getting to the end line. It's often negotiating the way, the continuum to get to that end point. Those skills are so critical, but for many people who have been in the work world a really long time, that's a really tough adjustment, wouldn't you say?
I think that in the past 20 to 30 years, we are working in more collaborative work environments. It's more mm-hmm. collaborative than ever before, and we've had to rely on interpersonal communication more than ever. So if people have been in work environments where they're a big fish in a small pond, so to speak, and they haven't developed that ability for cross-functional collaboration, for example, this is the time when they can really see themselves in a disadvantage, because just the way the world is now, you have to be able to communicate. And in order to be able to communicate, you have to at least attempt to understand the other person's point of view.
So last week, we talked with another guest about this idea of presence and being present in each other's lives, even though, like, I'm looking at you on a screen and the video quality is very good, and yet we are digitized here.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on presence, and how can EQ help us achieve presence when we're not in each other's physical space?
When you say presence, you're talking about digital presence?
No, I'm talking about emotional presence. Like if you're on a phone call with somebody.
Yeah.
You're not, as you said, picking up on nonverbal cues. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing your soft skills.
Yeah.
Even on a video call, like we're on Zoom right now, I got a pretty good sense of you because you're very expressive. But some people are yeah. not. Some people are yeah. not expressive, and they cloak their physicality because that's just the way they are. And so you don't get a sense of, okay, they're not answering me, and maybe they don't understand what I'm asking them, or maybe they're dealing with something. Presence is like, okay, it's making very conscious the fact that we're not in the same physical space. Let's find some ways to be present in this moment so that we have a quality experience and we get our work done and we collaborate well and it's enjoyable.
So a couple thoughts I have there. This type of person who's not very expressive, what I can say is, again, that this is probably something that this person has struggled with in person. It's not just online, mm-hmm. it's in person. But by virtue of the fact that we have access to the nonverbal cues there, it's going to be easier to manage that type of communication. But then it comes back to you and how you're trying to engage with this person, right? Mm. You're trying to figure them out and find common ground with them. And if all you're getting is this flat affect in return,
right.
You're getting like this stone-faced,
yeah.
and it doesn't matter what you do. You can go up there and do some kind of dance or do some kind of crazy maneuver, whatever, mm-hmm. and you're just getting flatness back. So, you know, from an emotional intelligence standpoint, yeah, you can say, well, this person is showing up with low emotional expression, but it kind of pings back to you in terms of, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage this interaction, right? And then depending on what the situation is or who that person is to you, are they a colleague? Are they a superior? Are they a direct report to you? That's going to determine how you respond to that. But again, this starts with the awareness there. So some people, they are just not naturally expressive, right? they may be aware of it or they may not be aware of it, or they may be more expressive in certain situations than in others. But it comes back to their awareness of this, and are they aware of this, and do they see the need to adapt that skill set?
I see.
Or not, right? And then for us too, when we encounter someone who is low with expression, how do we adapt ourselves or not? I mean, in most cases, it's probably not going to be very effective for me to just go up there and be even more expressive and jump into that person's face. That's probably going to make them retreat even more. So,
right.
So you kind of have to gauge the interaction in the moment.
You know, one of the tough things about 2020, listen, we never saw this pandemic coming. I mean, I imagine some people thought we would have a pandemic at some point, but you know, in the beginning of March, I did my last out-of-town trip, and that was it, you know? And so all those people that I met down in Orlando early March at my podcast convention, I have not seen any of them other than on a video screen.
Yeah.
And so what comes to mind for me, Edith, is that I think we need EQ now more than ever, because something's been taken away from us. Our physical presence to each other. The fact that if we're in each other's physical presence in a hybrid office situation, we're wearing masks. And so now the only facial cues we might get are maybe a glint in the eye, but we're not seeing what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's covered up.
Yeah.
So we need EQ more than ever to figure out how do we get around that barrier of not reading the facial muscles the way we used to. I mean, right now, or like this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
So immediately I'm thinking of another EQ element called reality testing, because this really comes into a lot of what we've been talking about here. When you're talking about looking at someone in their region, their mouth region, their facial expressions are absent, right?
Right.
We don't have those visual cues like we did before. So what are we going to do? Again, our brains fill in that information for better or for worse. So we have to look at the data that is available to us. And we have to look at it objectively as much as we can. And again, believe it or not, we are notoriously bad at doing this. This is very well documented. We are not as emotionally intelligent as we think we are.
No, I'd agree with that.
And this element, this one called reality testing, this is one, it's notoriously bad, but we think we are rational, objective human beings. But we're notoriously bad at it because of our own confirmation biases.
Okay. Explain to our audience what a confirmational bias is.
We all look for information in the world that supports our beliefs,
right?
Our inherent moral beliefs and our own things that matter to us. And we are doing this often unconsciously. We're not aware that we are skipping over data points that can be equally valid, but we are unconsciously looking for information that supports our beliefs. We see it all the time in the political world. We see it in families. And it really does speak to this particular element of emotional intelligence called reality testing, which is our ability and tendency to look at external data for what it is, not our interpretation of the data, but what the data actually is in reality. I think if we can admit that we are susceptible to these biases, if we have that awareness to admit that, we can learn to identify what our biases are, and then we can potentially avoid them. So I want to choose to believe in human beings' capacity and ability to do these things, to be honest with ourselves, to become more self-aware, and to harness this power of reality testing to help us to make better decisions.
So I think what you're saying is backed up by the notion that I have that in 2020, most of us are suffering something, a loss, a family member like I had. We lost a family member to COVID. And I'll tell you, you can never really get over that. It could be the loss of a job. That is palpable. Or it could be the loss of community. there are families out there that their kids aren't playing team sports in the wintertime or in the fall. And so they have that loss of their community, a literal community with people in the community that maybe they don't work with, but they're part of their lives. Wearing the mask, I think, has forced upon people a structure that makes some people uneasy. You know, they don't like wearing a mask. There might be psychological reasons why that mask is troubling to some people. I've read that. So I think what you're saying is, and I guess this is really important for hiring managers, but also for peers, is that we start from a standpoint of, I don't know what I don't know about you.
Absolutely. I mean, and we can choose when we meet somebody. So if we're out in the world and, you know, you encounter somebody who's not wearing a mask and they're standing fairly close to you, for some of us, there's this natural assumption, like, you know, what's this guy's problem here?
Right.
You know, not kind of following the rules. But again, we have the choice in that moment to stop and say to ourselves, you know, I don't know who this person is. I don't know what he or she has been through. I don't know why they're not wearing a mask. So let me not make assumptions. And I tell you, if we can train ourselves to do this, just pause and think before responding. This is an exercise that can hit so many of these areas of emotional intelligence. And it can really help to make our world a better place if we can train ourselves to stop in that moment.
How do you think this is all going to change your practice of EQ and the best practices of EQ in particular? I'm talking about the pandemic. I'm talking about 2020, this meteor that's hit us.
I think that whatever it is that we've struggled with pre-pandemic is going to be amplified now and post-pandemic. Again, if we let it. I tend to think of these things as individual challenges rather than collective challenges, because I just think everybody's different. Everybody is at a different place in life. Everybody has a different struggle. And just looking at people as individuals and relating to them where they are, I think that's something that can help us all in these times.
So let me ask you one last question, and this is a positive. What positive things have you noticed about this year that has buoyed your sense that EQ is really such an essential element of how we get through work and our day and our interactions with other people?
This is a great question because it speaks to one of the most important elements of emotional intelligence, which is optimism. And a lot of people have told me that the pandemic has given them more quality time with their families, which is really great. And a lot of people have discovered hobbies or reconnected with people. So there's definitely opportunities out there, even in the midst of a crisis. And I do have one really optimistic story to share that's the result of the pandemic. A colleague of mine who had just finished working a triple shift one day over the summer.
A triple shift?
A triple shift, yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
I know, right? It's crazy. And obviously he was exhausted, but he went to bed as normal and he woke up about midnight saying he wasn't feeling well. He was dizzy and had shortness of breath and he started to get nauseous. And he told his wife, okay, I've got COVID. We've got to go to the emergency room right now. So they went to the emergency room and he was just so bad off. He had trouble walking in the door. But when they checked him in, they said, you don't have COVID. You're having a heart attack.
Right.
And it turned out he had 100% blockage. It's what they call the widowmaker.
Right.
And he was immediately, you know, taken to
surgery.
By helicopter. And he spent a few days there. And fortunately, he's fine now. Obviously, he's on a lot of medication. He's had to modify his diet. But he's a young guy. I think he's like 44 years old. Not overweight. Not a smoker. And no risk factors other than high cholesterol runs in his family. Right. But here's the thing. If it were not for COVID, he told me he would have just taken 2 Advil and gone back to sleep.
And probably wouldn't have woken up.
He probably would not have made it. So
what amazing.
It is. Like in a really weird, roundabout way, COVID saved his life.
I think what you've just described is the opportunity that chaos provides us.
Yeah.
You and I are speaking in the morning of Election Day 2020. And I don't know about you. I'm reading social media comments from my friends. They are apoplectic. on either side of the aisle. Oh my God, what's going to happen if this happens? You know, 40 years ago, I lived through the Reagan Revolution, and people were saying the same things. And without getting into my own personal politics, if that revolution hadn't happened, certain things in my career would not have presented. Mm-hmm. Chaos and opportunity, yin and yang, go hand in hand. And I guess harnessing good emotional intelligence helps us to reap the rewards of that chaos to create wonderful opportunities. And what I mean by that, people who would never have gotten a pet because they were like, well, I don't have time for it, whatever. Now they're working at home. The bounty out of the pandemic has been that animal shelters have been cleaned out. These pets have been adopted, and people are, and now they have dogs. I live in a, as you know, in an apartment community. There are so many dogs out, you know, people walking dogs now, and they adopted these pets because they're working from home now and they love the companionship, and that has enhanced their lives. So I think we have an opportunity. I am forever hopeful. I believe our best days lie ahead, either in our own bravery or in the fact that maybe our fortunes improve. And I think we have to look at life and just say, what presents? What can I seize positively? How can I engage with the world better? How can I be a better participant in life, right?
You know, yeah, and it's this speaks to the fact that it's always a choice what we do with that. Yeah, things might be, you know, not ideal, might be a little bit bleak, whatever, but it's a choice. How we respond is a choice. And emotional intelligence is a choice.
Right.
How we use it, it's a choice. And the other day I was just discussing this topic with a friend of mine. And she told me, you know, Edith, until I started talking to you about this, I thought, hey, this is just the way I am. But now I realize that I can change. I don't have to be limited to this type of mindset. And that's the beauty of EQ. It's always a choice. We choose how we're going to behave in certain situations. We choose to harness certain aspects of emotional intelligence in different situations and with different people. Mm-hmm. And whatever our choice, that's going to impact how other people see us. And that's going to impact the results that we get. So it's a good place for me to say here that emotional intelligence can change and it should change. It's not stagnant like IQ or cognitive intelligence. And it's not to say that IQ is not important. Of course, IQ is important too, but it's pretty much set by the time we're 18 to 20. It's not going to change much after that, but EQ does. And that's what gives us the edge.
I'll leave on this note. I think if the one constant of 2020 has been uncertainty, learning to live with uncertainty, EQ helps to mitigate the effects of that uncertainty in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just knowing that we have the choice and how to respond. That's huge.
Edith Richards, always a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for being on the podcast again. You've got a great podcast yourself. Would you point our listeners to it?
Sure. So actually, I have a new one that's in pre-production right now, and it's on emotional intelligence. It's called EQ at Work. And I had hoped to launch it in October or November. It may be delayed until the new year as I wrap up a few other things. But I also have a series that's available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts, called Myers-Briggs Question Corner.
There you go. So this ENTP thanks you for that. And and we will have links to that podcast and the new one on the show notes page for this episode. Have a great day. Thank you so much. Excellent. Great to see you.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care. Stay safe.
Links to Edith Richards' social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who are real-time reimagining the work that we do and hope to do. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts by keywording the Dan Smolin Podcast, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.